Conrad, there you are.
Ellery Hudson emerged from the crowd to shake his hand. Then he turned to Rose, put his hands on her shoulders, and leaned forward to kiss her cheek.
And Rose, you're looking as lovely as ever.
She looked shocked until Conrad leaned close to her.
You're supposed to be a member of the family, remember?
Then Rose smiled brightly and gave Hudson a hug.
Ellery, darling, how are you? How's Violet?
Anxious to see you.
Hudson slipped out of her embrace.
She's right over there.
He pointed to an attractive brunette in a green gown.
Why don't you go say hello to your cousin, dear? I'll join you in a moment.
Of course.
As she moved through the crowd, smiling and gracious, Hudson leaned in close to Conrad.
Quite a little actress, isn't she?
She is.
I've been talking to people about you. You know how this crowd likes to gossip. Whenever I brought up your name and said that you were going to be here tonight, nearly everyone brought up the tragedy that befell you, if I may speak frankly.
Please do.
Everyone's very glad that it turned out you weren't killed after all.
That's good to know.
A few people brought up Pamela as well. They remember when the two of you were engaged.
Do any of them remember her being here 3 years ago?
Actually, one man did remember her paying a visit to Denver about the time we're interested in. But brace yourself, Conrad. He didn't know anything about the children.
Conrad felt a surge of disappointment. He swallowed it and told himself that was just the beginning. Whoever the man was, he might know more than he realized, especially if he had spent any time with Pamela while she was there.
Who is it? I want to talk to him.
That's the odd thing about it. I don't believe you even know him. He didn't live in this area when you and Pamela were engaged. He became acquainted with her when she was here the last time. I'll introduce you.
Hudson guided Conrad through the crowd. As they approached a knot of men standing in front of a huge fireplace that wasn't lit at this time of year, he heard loud laughter coming from them, evidently prompted by something one of the men had said. That man stood with his back to Conrad, his broad shoulders seeming to stretch the expensive fabric of his coat.
Excuse me.
Hudson and Conrad stepped up to the group.
Conrad, I'd like for you to meet Ransom McKinney.
The big man swung around in response to the lawyer's voice. Conrad recognized him instantly. The man was the son of a bitch who had attacked Conrad in the palace gambling room the night before. The smile on McKinney's face disappeared. An angry scowl replaced it as his fingers tightened on the glass he held.
You! What are you doing here?
Is something wrong here?
Damn right there's something wrong. Judging by the fact that this hombre's here, you need to start inviting a better class of guests to these little get-togethers of yours.
Now see here, I don't care how much money you have, Ransom, you can't...
Conrad put a hand on the lawyer's shoulder to stop him.
Don't worry about it, Ellery. He's just blustering, like an old bull pawing the dirt.
An old bull who can trample you into that dirt, you little son.
That's enough. Enough, do you hear me? I won't stand for this. If you want to continue as my client, Ransom, you'll apologize to my friend. You may not know it, but this is Conrad Browning.
Clearly, McKinney was enough of a businessman for the name to mean something to him. His shaggy gray eyebrows went up in surprise for a moment, then his eyes narrowed.
You're Conrad Browning?
That's right.
And maybe both of us jumped the gun a mite.
McKinney shifted his drink from his right to his left and extended the right.
Sorry, Browning, for the trouble last night and for anything I said here tonight.
You two have met?
That's right. He's the one who gave me this bruise.
He motioned with the hand holding the drink to a small purple mark on his face. McKinney's right hand was still held out. Conrad took it.
Apology accepted, McKinney.
He didn't think the rancher's words were sincere and still didn't trust him. But Conrad didn't want to continue the scene in Ellery Hudson's house.
Oh, for a moment there, I thought we were going to have fisticuffs.
Or a gunfight.
Ransom, you're not armed, are you?
Damn right I am. I never go anywhere without packing iron. I learned that lesson a long time ago.
He pulled back his coat to reveal the gleaming ivory handle of a small revolver resting in a shoulder holster under his arm.
How about you, Browning?
I came to eat dinner, not trade shots with anybody.
Let's all settle down. I'm glad this was just a misunderstanding.
The room was big enough that some of the guests hadn't even been aware of the confrontation. Those who were had gone back to their socializing.
Ransom, could we talk to you for a moment?
You mean you and Browning? I don't see why not.
The three of them headed for a quiet corner.
Ransom, do you remember when I was asking you earlier about a woman named Pamela Tarleton?
I'm sure I do. She's a little spitfire, that one. Mighty good looker, too. I wonder if she'll come back to Denver one of these days.
It's very unlikely. She's dead.
McKinney's fingers closed so tightly on the glass, Conrad was sure it would shatter.
What do you mean she's dead?
She was killed about a year and a half ago. It was an accident.
That doesn't hardly seem possible. She was so full of life when she was here.
He stared down into his empty glass for a moment, like he was remembering, then lifted his eyes to Conrad.
How did you know her?
I was engaged to her at one time.
Really? She didn't mention anything about that. Hell, I'm sorry for your loss, Browning. I didn't know anything about it.
That's all right. How did the two of you meet?
I saw her in a restaurant here in town one night, having dinner by herself. She looked lonely, so I went over and asked her if she'd like some company. I could tell by looking at her that she was a mighty fine lady. I'm just an old cattleman with a lot of the bark still on me, but I've never been one to sit back and wait when I see something worth going after. No offense.
None taken. We weren't engaged at the time. What happened?
Well, the two of us hit it off. I was quite a bit older than her, and like I said, rough as a cob compared to her. But she said she enjoyed talking to me. She suggested we get together again while she was in town, so we did. We had dinner a few more times, but that's all that happened, Browning. I give you my word on that.
How long did she stay here?
A week, maybe 10 days. Then she said she had to travel to San Francisco. Never saw her again after that.
And she was alone, you said?
Well, that's right. I never saw anybody else with her. I've been answering your questions, Browning, but I gotta admit I'm curious. Just what is it you're after?
I'm just trying to clear up a family matter. I'm sorry. I'm really not at liberty to say any more.
All right. I suppose I can accept that. Don't reckon I have any choice but to accept it.
Thanks.
Anything else I can do for you?
No, that's all. I'm obliged to you for your help, McKinney.
The rancher gave Conrad a curt nod, but didn't say anything else. He headed back over to the men he'd been talking to earlier. Conrad and Hudson stayed where they were for a moment.
I'm sorry. I was hoping he could tell us something about the children, but just because Pamela didn't mention them to him doesn't mean that they weren't here in town with her.
I know. She was traveling with a nurse, so it's possible the nurse was taking care of them whenever Pamela met with McKinney. He seems a strange sort to show up at one of your dinner parties.
He's definitely rough around the edges, like he said, but he's a client, and it seems to be important to him that he at least try to fit in. To be honest, though, he seems like he'd be a lot more at home in some place like the gambling room of the Palace Theater.
As a matter of fact, that's where we met last night.
Really?
I'm afraid I'm a lot more disreputable character than I used to be, Ellery.
I doubt that. Not that you used to be disreputable. That's not what I mean.
We'd better go see how your wife and Rose are getting along. Violet may not appreciate being left to manage the masquerade on her own.
She doesn't mind. I told her your story, and she was eager to help.
They found Violet Hudson and Rose Sullivan on the other side of the room. Rose was smiling and looked like she was having a wonderful time. She clutched Conrad's arm.
Thank you for bringing me tonight. I've always dreamed of being in a place like this, associating with fine people like these.
I'm sure you're a fine person yourself.
Nothing like this.
A few minutes later, a servant called everyone to dinner. The table in the dining room was long, covered with a snowy cloth of fine linen, and set with beautiful china and crystal. The food was excellent, the wine was even better, and Conrad should have been enjoying the meal. Instead, he kept thinking about the things Rance McKinney had said about Pamela. He glanced along the table at the rancher, who was with a beautiful woman with midnight black hair. Conrad didn't know her. McKinney's words had carried the ring of truth, but Conrad's instincts told him there was more to the story, something McKinney hadn't told him about the time he had spent with Pamela. Ellery Hudson had talked to all of the other guests and had come up empty. Conrad trusted the lawyer. The only lead they had was McKinney, and even though the rancher seemed to be a dead end, for some reason, Conrad didn't believe that. He wanted to know more, which meant he was going to have to figure out some way to spend more time with McKinney. That prospect didn't appeal to him at all. When dinner was over, everyone went back into the other room for brandy and dancing. When Rose asked in a slightly breathless voice if they could dance, Conrad didn't have the heart to refuse her. They swept around the room, and he had to admit she was a good dancer, very graceful and light on her feet. Her beauty made her popular, too, and when one of the male guests cut in, Conrad let her go. She smiled and wiggled her fingers at him as the man twirled her away. She was having the night of her life, and Conrad was glad for that. As for himself, he sought out Ellery Hudson again. Soon he had the lawyer off to the side where they could talk quietly.
I think McKinney knows more than he's telling us.
Conrad, you heard him. He had dinner a few times with Pamela. That's all. If there actually was more between them, well, knowing those details isn't really going to help anything, is it?
That's not what I'm talking about. I just have a hunch he's not telling us the truth. Not all of it, anyway. Bat Masterson told me that McKinney is quite a card player. Maybe I need to sit in on a game with him.
You know, I think McKinney plans to play in that big tournament Masterson is putting together.
Wait a minute. Bat said something to me about a high-stakes game, but he didn't say anything about a tournament.
It's going to be 30 or 40 of the biggest high rollers this side of San Francisco. I've heard a lot of gossip about it. It's supposed to last for several days, maybe as long as a week, depending on how long it takes to narrow down the field to the top four players.
Bat didn't say anything about that. McKinney's going to play?
That's what I've heard. A man who likes to gamble as much as he does. I don't see how he could resist.
No, I don't either.
If you really think he can tell you more about Pamela, that would be a way to get closer to him, Conrad. You can learn a lot about a man over a poker table.
You certainly can.
I've heard that the buy-in is going to be awfully steep, though. $10,000 is the rumor.
I can handle that.
Would you like for me to make arrangements for the cash with the bank?
Yes, Ellery, I would. I'm taking cards in this game. And we'll see just what sort of player Ransom McKinney really is.
There was a large garden behind the Hudson House, and after a while, the French doors were opened so the guests could stroll outside or continue dancing on the large flagstone terrace if they wanted to. Rose came up to Conrad and took his hand.
Can we go out into the garden? It's a lovely night.
Since he already knew there was a connection between Pamela and Rance McKinney, and since he had decided to take part in the poker tournament with the rancher, Conrad didn't see anything else he could accomplish there. He might as well make the evening as enjoyable for Rose as he could.
Of course. Come on.
He led her onto the terrace, which was softly lit by lamps spaced out on the stone railing around it. They could still hear the music, so he took her in his arms and swept her around the terrace several times. As they danced, she moved closer and closer to him until she was leaning against him and her blonde hair rested on his shoulder. He was all too aware of the soft warmth of her body in his arms. When the music came to a stop, Rose lifted her head a little and looked up at him.
Conrad.
He didn't try to stop her when she kissed him. Rose's lips tasted sweet as she kissed him, and he kissed her back. He couldn't seem to stop himself. He forced himself to pull away.
Rose, this isn't necessary. It isn't part of the role you're playing.
I know that, silly. Don't you like it, Conrad?
Of course I do, but it wouldn't be right for me to force you into...
Conrad, you're not forcing me into anything. I want to do anything you want to do. But if you'd rather go slow, I understand. Why don't we take a walk in the garden? There's plenty of moonlight.
All right. I suppose we can do that.
She slipped her hand into his as they went down several marble steps from the raised terrace and started along a flagstone path that wound through the big garden. The shrubbery that grew thickly in places could have concealed any number of things, but he didn't intend to stray off the path with Rose. It was a perfect night for romance, with a warm breeze making the limbs of the trees rustle softly. The moon Rose had mentioned floated in the heavens, a silvery ball surrounded by millions of stars against a backdrop of ebony night. The sweet fragrance of flowers filled the air. At one time, strolling through a beautiful garden like that with a lovely woman like Rose would have been a wonderful evening for Conrad Browning, but he had a hard time not thinking about Rance McKinney and wondering if that son of a bitch knew more than he was telling about Pamela. Rose came to a stop in a patch of deep shadow cast by a pine tree that grew close to the path. Conrad stopped as well and turned to face her as she rested her hands on his shoulders.
Conrad, you really don't have to worry. I'm a grown woman, and I know what I'm doing. You know I'd do anything for you.
You've already helped out plenty. I think we should go back inside.
Just a few more minutes. I'm enjoying pretending that a man like you could really care for a girl like me.
He bit back a curse of frustration. She was playing on his sympathy and he knew it, but that didn't mean the tactic was any less effective. In the darkness, he felt the warmth of her breath on his face.
Conrad.
Suddenly, Conrad heard a sound that set off alarm bells in his head. His instincts took over.
Oh.
He pushed Rose toward the tree.
Get down!
He whipped around and saw moonlight reflect off cold steel as a dark shape thrust a long-bladed knife at him. Conrad twisted to the side. The blade went past him, and the man wielding it was thrown off balance by the miss.
Whoa.
He took a stumbling step closer, bringing him well within reach of the right fist Conrad sent smashing into his face. The blow staggered the man, and he dropped the knife. But that didn't stop him from trying to rip Conrad's belly open with a second knife. Conrad jerked out of the way of the blade.
Rose, run!
Conrad was trying to stay between her and the attacker.
Get inside now!
She didn't respond, and he didn't know if she was all right or not. At the moment, he didn't have time to check on her. The man with the knife caught his balance and came at Conrad again, thrusting and slashing. Conrad had to give ground, backing along the flagstone path. One of the stones suddenly shifted under his foot, and it was his turn to lose his balance. He went over backward, landing on the grass at the edge of the path. He felt the .32 caliber digging into the small of his back, but he didn't have time to reach for it. The would-be assassin leaped at him, knife upraised for a killing strike. Suddenly, the man stopped his attack. In the bright moonlight, Conrad saw his eyes widen, then bug out in shock and pain. The man toppled to the side, landing face first on the ground. Sticking up in the center of his back was the handle of the knife he had used to try to kill Conrad. The heavy blade was completely buried in his body. Rose stood there, both hands pressed to her mouth.
Oh! Oh my God! What have I done? What have I done?
Conrad climbed to his feet and took her in his arms, holding her trembling body against him.
Maybe saved my life, that's what you've done.
She pressed her face against his chest and began to sob. Conrad patted her a little awkwardly on the back. He had never been very good with crying women. He didn't know what to do or say to comfort them and get them to stop crying. A rapid patter of footsteps came from the direction of the house.
Conrad? Conrad, are you out here?
Conrad turned and kept an arm around Rose's shoulders.
Over here, Ellery!
He saw a light bobbing. Someone was bringing a lantern. Hudson and half a dozen other men hurried up to them. Rance McKinney was one of the men, Conrad noted. The light from the lantern fell on the man sprawled face down with the knife in his back.
Good Lord! What happened?
This man tried to kill me. It's thanks to Rose that he didn't.
Oh, no, I didn't really. I just saw him about to kill you, Conrad, and his knife was lying there, and I picked it up, and
Conrad held her while McKinney strode forward and knelt beside the body.
We better make sure he's really dead.
The rancher took hold of the man's shoulders and rolled him onto his back. Conrad made sure that Rose couldn't see the twisted, lifeless face staring up into the lantern light.
Does anybody know him?
From the way the assembled men reacted, Conrad could tell that they didn't. As Conrad held Rose, he studied the man's face. The would-be assassin's features were coarse and beard stubbled, and his clothes were threadbare.
Damn thief from the looks of him. Probably saw the way the house was lit up and figured there was a party going on. Snuck into the garden and thought he could rob one of the guests.
I think you're probably right, Ransom. I've already called for the police. They'll be here soon. They may recognize him.
Maybe some of you men could stay with the body. I think I should get Miss Sullivan back inside, away from...
Of course, of course. Ransom, if you can keep an eye on...
Sure, go on.
A couple of the other men volunteered to stay with the corpse as well. Conrad and Hudson took Rose into the house, keeping her between them. She was pretty unsteady on her feet. She'd had a big evening, all right, Conrad thought. Maybe the biggest of her life, including killing a man. Violet Hudson and the rest of the dinner guests were waiting anxiously inside the French doors. When Violet saw how pale and shaken Rose was, she hurried to take charge of the young woman.
Oh, this poor dear needs to go upstairs and lie down with a cool cloth on her head.
She put an arm around Rose and led her to the wide, curving staircase. Rose glanced back at Conrad as she started up the stairs with Violet. She tried to summon up a tear-streaked smile, but it was a pretty feeble effort. Conrad returned the smile and gave her a firm nod.
All right, everyone. The police are coming, and I'm sure they'll want to talk to Mr. Browning and Miss Sullivan, but they shouldn't need anyone else.
With that, the guests began taking their coats and wraps and filing out, eager to be away from the scene of violence and possible scandal. In a matter of moments, Conrad and Hudson found themselves alone.
I promise you, Conrad, my dinner parties aren't usually occasion for such excitement. As a rule, they're pretty quiet affairs. You aren't hurt, are you?
A few bumps and bruises, maybe. But I managed to avoid the knife while that hombre was trying to cut me open.
Hombre? Oh, that's right. You've spent a lot of time in the Southwest recently, haven't you?
Hudson could believe that if he wanted to, but Conrad knew the truth. When danger reared its head, Kid Morgan was never far away. Rose was much more composed by the time the police were ready to talk to her.
Yes. Mr. Morgan and I were walking in the garden when that man came out of the shadows and attacked us from behind.
She was now talking to a detective in a brown tweed suit and a bowler hat.
You stuck that knife in him after he dropped it, miss?
That's right. The man had Mr. Morgan on the ground and was about to kill him. I didn't really think about what I was doing. I just saw the knife lying there on the walk and picked it up.
I think that's enough. It's obvious what happened here, detective.
The man nodded and closed the notebook in which he had been scrawling words as Rose answered his questions.
I believe you're right, Mr. Hudson. The man was a thief, but he picked the wrong fella to rob.
Do you know who he is?
Well, not really. I hate to say it, but there are plenty of varmints like him in Denver. The town's not near as wild as it used to be, but we still get our share of outlaws drifting in. The Undertaker's wagon should have carried this one off already. I'll go and check.
Rose shuddered a little at the mention of the Undertaker, Conrad noted. She was still pale, and he knew that despite the circumstances, the fact that she had taken a human life probably would continue to weigh heavily on her for a while.
I'll be in touch if I need any more information. Good night.
The detective went out the French doors into the garden, where a couple of uniformed officers stood holding lanterns at the scene of the attack. Conrad put a hand on Rose's arm.
I can take you home now.
Violet Hudson was sitting nearby. She stood up.
Nonsense. Rose doesn't need to be alone tonight. We have plenty of room here. She'll spend the night in one of our guest rooms.
Violet frowned at her husband.
And she won't be at work tomorrow unless she feels like it either.
Of course, dear. Whatever you say.
Violet put an arm around Rose and led her upstairs again.
Quite an evening.
That's right. But at least we learned a little.
What's that?
We learned that McKinney was around Pamela quite a bit while she was here, and may know more than he's letting on. We also learned it's not wise to turn your back on Rose Sullivan when there's a knife close at hand.
I never would have expected such a thing of her. Did she really save your life, Conrad? Or did you have things in hand?
If she hadn't stepped in, I'm not sure what would have happened.
Well then, we'll give her the benefit of the doubt and consider her a heroine. Maybe that will make it easier for her to get over what happened tonight.
Maybe. Good night, Ellery.
Good night, Conrad.
He told Hudson goodnight and went out to the buggy where the driver waited.
I heard about all the excitement, Mr. Browning. Are you all right?
I'm fine.
Instead of sitting in the back, he climbed onto the buggy's front seat next to the driver and nodded for him to get the vehicle moving. The driver slapped the reins against the backs of the two horses hitched to the buggy.
What really happened back there in the garden? If you don't mind me asking. One of the other drivers said somebody tried to kill you.
The man wanted to rob me.
Or had he? That question suddenly crossed Conrad's mind. He thought back over exactly what had happened. He had been holding Rose Sullivan, and she had been about to kiss him. Then he heard the faint scrape of the man's boot leather on the flagstone walk. If not for that tiny warning, that little sound that some people wouldn't have even heard, a second later the man would have driven the knife deep in his back. Conrad supposed it was easier to go through a man's pockets and rob him after he was dead. But if the thief had succeeded in killing him, then he would have been forced to kill Rose as well to keep her from crying out and screaming for help. Would a robber have been willing to murder two people just to steal a few dollars? Of course, things like that happened, Conrad reminded himself. People had been murdered for pennies, for their clothes, or their shoes, or for no good reason at all. But that usually happened when they were fighting back against being robbed. The man had been set on killing Conrad right from the first. That much was clear from the way he had attacked. He hadn't threatened or demanded money. He had just gone for the death blow. The would-be assassin was a stranger to Conrad. He couldn't think of a single reason the man would have wanted to kill him. But Pamela had wanted him dead years ago. She had come up with the elaborate scheme to torture him by withholding the knowledge of his children's birth and then letting him know about it after they were hidden away. She had also made arrangements to have him killed when he started searching for them. It was all a big, vicious game to her, he thought. Set out a goal, the twins, and give him the clues he needed to keep him on the trail, but set up death traps for him along the way. If those traps were successful, then he would die knowing he had failed to find his children. If they weren't, they would make him more determined than ever to continue the search. Pamela had known him well enough to predict that reaction from him. Was the attempt on his life just another in that series of traps orchestrated by Pamela? He didn't know the answer to that question, but couldn't help pondering it.
Sir? Mr. Browning?
With a little shake of his head, Conrad realized that the driver on the seat beside him was talking to him. The buggy had stopped moving.
We're here, sir. The Lansing House.
Sure enough, they were. The buggy had come to a stop in front of the hotel.
Thank you.
He took a coin from his pocket, pressed it into the driver's hand, and stepped down from the buggy.
You be careful now, Mr. Browning. I got a feeling there are still folks out there who wish you harm.
I know there are, but they're going to be disappointed.
Conrad slept late the next morning. In the afternoon, he went to Ellery Hudson's office and found Julia Moorhead at the desk in the outer office. There was no sign of Rose.
Mr. Browning, it's good to see you.
Julia got to her feet.
I heard about what happened last night at Mr. Hudson's house, of course. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Conrad took off his hat and held it in front of him. People who were acquainted with him in the business and society part of his life didn't seem to understand that somebody trying to kill him wasn't all that unusual.
Do you know how Rose is doing?
That poor girl. I talked to Mrs. Hudson on the telephone this morning. She said Rose is still very upset. I can understand why she feels that way. It's why I've taken over here this morning. No offense, Mr. Browning, but your idea turned out not to be such a good one.
I don't know about that. I'm still alive, and I might not have been if not for Rose.
Well, I suppose there is that to consider. What can we do for you this morning?
I came by mainly to check on Rose. Is Ellery free?
He's in conference with a client, and then he has to be in court in a little while.
That's all right. Just tell him I stopped by.
Of course.
When it was 2 o'clock, Conrad had a hunch there was a good chance he would find Bat Masterson at the Palace Variety Theater and Gambling Parlor. That hunch turned out to be correct. The famous former lawman and current gambler was sitting at one of the poker tables, cards in hand, playing in what appeared to be a low-stakes game with three other men. The pot in the center of the table didn't add up to much. Masterson was just keeping in practice, Conrad thought, as he caught the man's eye and nodded toward the bar.
I'm out, gentlemen.
Masterson squared up his cards and dropped them face down on the table. He pushed back his chair, stood up, and joined Conrad at the bar.
I hope I didn't cause you to throw in a good hand, Bat.
Actually, I probably would have won. But did you see that pot? Chicken feed. I've lost more than that betting on whether the next woman through the door will be a blonde, a brunette, or a redhead.
I hope the news I have for you will more than make up for it. I've decided to play in this poker tournament you're organizing.
Really? I am glad to hear that.
You're glad that you'll have $10,000 more in the kitty.
Well, that too, of course. But you're a good player. You'll bring some excitement to the game. Say, you're not doing this in hopes of getting back at Rance McKinney, are you? He's going to be part of the tournament.
Actually, McKinney is the reason I decided to play. But not because of what happened in here a couple nights ago.
He had thought about it and decided to take Masterson into his confidence. He knew his father trusted the man, and Frank Morgan's opinion was good enough for Conrad. Quietly, as they lingered over schooners of cold beer, he told Masterson about the real reason he had come to Denver and the conversation he'd had with McKinney at Ellery Hudson's house the night before. Masterson tugged at one side of his mustache as he frowned in thought.
You believe Rance McKinney knows more about Pamela than he's saying?
My gut tells me he does.
I don't believe I ever met the lady, but from what I know about her, she and McKinney strike me as an odd pair.
There's no doubt about that. But if there's one thing I've learned in the past couple years, Bat, it's that Pamela would use anybody she could to help her get the revenge on me she wanted.
Yes, I can see that. I heard about what happened at Ellery Hudson's house last night.
It's not in the newspaper, is it?
No. Hudson has too much influence in this town for that. He wouldn't want everybody knowing that a guest at one of his dinner parties was almost murdered in his garden. But I have my sources. Every old lawman does.
Conrad didn't doubt that.
Do you think it's possible your former fiancé had anything to do with that fellow trying to stick a knife in your back?
I thought of the same thing. It wouldn't surprise me a bit.
Considering what you've told me, I wouldn't be surprised either. And Rance McKinney was there.
Indeed he was.
Masterson gave Conrad a long look.
There aren't going to be guns blazing over the tables in that poker tournament I'm putting together, are there?
I can't promise anything.
The tournament was scheduled to begin the next night. Conrad intended to lie low at the Lansing house until then. Masterson had given him all the details. The tournament would take place in a large private room at the palace. The buy-in was $10,000, as Conrad already knew. There would be 8 tables with 6 players at each table, for a total of 48, slightly lower than had been rumored. The men would draw lots to see who played at each table. The games would continue until everyone at each table was cleaned out, except for one big winner, however long that took. Food and drink would be provided, as well as places to sleep if that proved necessary. Once the 8 winners were determined, the second round would consist of 2 tables with 4 players at each. Again, the games would continue until there were 2 big winners and everyone else was wiped out. Then those 2 winners would meet in the final game.
That could take weeks.
Not the way these hombres play. A lot of them like to take big plunges so they win big and lose big. I think it'll take less than a week to determine a winner.
Who will walk away with more than $500,000?
Probably closer to $1,000,000. You know what they say about the rich getting richer. You'll do all right, Conrad, if you just keep your wits about you.
I intend to.
He didn't care about the money he might win or lose. His lawyers, Ellery Hudson in Denver, Charles Harcourt back in Boston, Claudius Turnbuckle and John Stafford in San Francisco, would care. They would probably be horrified at the risks he was prepared to take in order to find his children. But none of that mattered. Not as long as his dreams were haunted by those nameless, faceless images. On the afternoon of the day the tournament was to begin, a knock sounded on the door of Conrad's hotel room. Arturo went to answer it.
Who is it?
Rose Sullivan?
Turning to look at Conrad sitting comfortably in one of the upholstered wing chairs, Arturo raised his eyebrows to inquire if Conrad wanted to let her in. He nodded. Arturo swung the door open.
Oh, Miss Sullivan, please come in.
Rose looked quizzically at him as she stepped into the room. Conrad got to his feet and made the introductions.
Rose, this is my friend, Arturo Vincenzo. Arturo, Miss Sullivan.
Arturo clasped her gloved hand.
The pleasure and the honor are mine, Miss Sullivan.
Thank you.
Might I take your hat?
No, thank you. I won't be here long.
She wore a dark blue skirt and jacket, a white blouse, and a hat of the same dark blue shade. Her hair was pulled up on her head again. She carried a black handbag.
Then perhaps something to drink.
She shook her head again. Arturo looked at Conrad.
I'll be in my room if you need me.
He withdrew discreetly from the sitting room. Conrad came over to Rose and clasped her hands.
Is he your servant?
A good friend. How are you, Rose? You're looking a lot better.
It was true. Most of the color had returned to her cheeks, and her hands weren't trembling at all as Conrad held them.
I'm all right. Mrs. Hudson has been very helpful. I think I would have fallen completely apart if it weren't for her. But I went back to my own place today, and tomorrow I'm going back to work.
Are you sure you're ready for that?
It's for the best. But I wanted to see you first to make sure you were all right. Mr. Hudson told me where you were staying. I hope that's not a problem.
Not at all. Come over here and sit down.
He took her handbag from her before she could protest and set it on a spindly-legged side table that was actually a valuable antique. With a firm hand on her arm, he ushered her over to a divan and sat down beside her as she took a seat.
I was curious if the police have found out any more about the man who tried to rob you.
If they have, they haven't said anything to me about it. I doubt if they'll ever find out who he was. Just some sneak thief.
Is everything else all right?
Yes, of course.
That's good. Mr. Browning, or is it all right if I still call you Conrad?
Conrad is just fine.
I don't know exactly why you wanted me to pretend to be Mrs. Hudson's cousin the other night, Conrad, but I'm sure it had something to do with whatever it was that brought you to Denver. I want you to know, if there's anything else I can do to help you, I'm more than willing.
You've done plenty. More than enough. And it could have gotten you hurt.
I'm not worried about that. I wouldn't worry about that, as long as I was with you.
Conrad frowned. He would have thought she'd realized it was dangerous to be around him. But she was offering to put herself right back into the line of fire.
I'm sorry, Rose. Do you trust me?
Of course I do, Conrad.
Then believe me when I tell you it's better that you're not involved in this anymore. Just go back to your job at the law office and don't worry about me or my problems.
Just like that?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, all right. I suppose if that's the way it has to be. But I have one request, Conrad.
Whatever it is, I'll be happy to do it, if I can.
As soon as the words were out of his mouth, he thought he might have been too hasty. It all depended on whatever favor Rose came up with to ask of him.
I'd like for you to take me to dinner.
That I can do.
At the best restaurant in Denver?
Of course. Just name it.
She mentioned a steakhouse where many of the cattle barons from Colorado and elsewhere ate. The poker tournament at the palace didn't start until 10 o'clock that evening. There would be plenty of time for him to have dinner with Rose first.
I'll pick you up at 7.
Conrad took Rose's hand, and they both stood up.
I'm looking forward to it.
She stepped closer to him, came up on her toes, and brushed a kiss across his cheek.
Until then, Conrad.
He handed her handbag to her, then showed her to the door and watched as she went down the hall toward the stairs. A door opened and closed behind him.
So, you have a dinner engagement with the lady before the poker games begin.
Why, Arturo, you old eavesdropper.
A part of my job is to look out for your best interests, sir.
And I appreciate that. But I'm not too worried about having dinner with a beautiful blonde.
The real danger would come later, he sensed, when he sat down across a poker table from Rance McKinney. Conrad didn't take Arturo along or hire a driver. He decided to handle the team himself. Tonight, Rose wore a red gown, light jacket, and hat. Conrad was having a hard time keeping his eyes on the road with her next to him.
How long have you lived here?
Not long, actually. About 3 months.
Where did you live before that?
St. Louis. I was born and raised there, in fact.
What made you leave, if I'm not being too inquisitive?
Not at all. My parents were both gone. I didn't have any other family there, and I decided I wanted to see something of the West. It was an adventure, I suppose you could say.
You've done well for yourself, getting a job in the city's top law firm in that amount of time.
I was lucky. Mrs. Moorhead told me that the girl who had the job before me took sick and passed away suddenly. Oh, that sounds terrible, doesn't it, to call such a thing lucky?
Someone's bad luck is nearly always someone else's good luck. I suppose that's the world's way of balancing things out.
Maybe so. But I still wish I hadn't said it.
Don't worry about it. I know what you meant.
They arrived at the restaurant a short time later. The dining room had booths made of dark, thick wood. The place just felt expensive, but Conrad didn't care about the cost. The meal was excellent. Thick steaks, mounds of German fried potatoes, a fine wine. It occurred to Conrad that he shouldn't be eating such a heavy meal. The poker tournament would be starting in just a few hours, and he needed to be alert instead of feeling like he ought to take a nap. Rose's company perked him up. She talked brightly and animatedly, obviously enjoying herself. After what she had gone through in order to help him out, he was glad he could give her a fine evening. But she would have to understand that he might never see her again. When they were ready to go, he linked arms with her as they walked out to the buggy. Rose leaned her head against his shoulder.
It's been such a lovely evening. I hate for it to end. Conrad, do you think we could go for a drive before you take me back to Mrs. Sherman's house?
Conrad thought about it for a moment, then nodded.
I don't see why not.
Denver's city government recently had begun widening many of the streets and planting trees in the center of them. It would be a picturesque drive, and the night air might refresh him and make him more alert for the poker tournament. He helped Rose into the buggy, then got the team moving and swung the vehicle into one of the recently widened boulevards. The trees were in bloom, filling the night with their fragrance.
Ah, it's beautiful.
Conrad had to agree. He was about to say so when he heard hoofbeats behind the buggy. It sounded like a couple of riders were about to overtake the vehicle. At first he thought they just wanted to pass him, but the horsebackers split, one galloping up each side of the vehicle. Both men wore black bandanas pulled up over their faces as they pointed revolvers into the buggy. Conrad hauled back on the reins as hard as he could with his left hand, while his right flashed behind his back and reached under his coat for the .32. The team lurched to a halt, their harnesses preventing them from rearing.
Out of the buggy! Out of the buggy now!
Oh!
Rose clutched at Conrad's arm, inadvertently keeping him from pulling his gun. He couldn't start trading lead with those two anyway, he realized. Not with Rose in the buggy, where a stray shot might kill her.
Hold your fire.
Get out of there. Get out and hand over all your money, mister, or that pretty girl you're with won't be so pretty anymore.
So it really was a robbery, Conrad thought. The men must have been watching the restaurant, waiting for one of the wealthy patrons to leave. Or was it? Maybe what they were saying was just for Rose's benefit, so that after he was dead, she could tell the authorities the killing was a hold-up attempt turned deadly. Either way, those two hombres were going to regret what they were trying to do, just as soon as he was sure that Rose was out of the line of fire. He wrapped the reins around the brake lever, but didn't set it. He held out his hands so the gunman could see them.
Take it easy. I'm getting out. Just leave the lady alone.
Sure. We just want your money and any other valuables you got, mister. We'll take the gal's handbag, too.
Conrad climbed down from the buggy.
Whatever you want, that's fine. You boys sound like you ought to be out robbing stagecoaches.
Ain't no stagecoaches no more. Shut up. No more talking than we have to. Now, mister...
Conrad snatched off his hat and slapped it against the rump of the nearest horse. He leaped away from the vehicle as the horses lunged forward, dragging the buggy behind it. He caught a glimpse of a startled Rose being thrown back against the seat as the team took off. The next instant, the .32 was in his hand. Conrad put two bullets in the chest of the man closest to him. As that man slumped backward in the saddle, his companion opened fire. As Conrad dived to his left, he fired twice more as he was falling. One of the slugs went through the left shoulder of the second gunman, and he fell out of the saddle. The gunman forced the weapon up again. Conrad wanted to take the man alive, but it didn't look like the varmint was going to give him much choice in the matter. Lying on his side in the street, he fired again. Conrad's bullet hit the man in the chest. Conrad scrambled to his feet and pointed his .32 at the wounded man.
Don't move!
The man had lost his gun. He lay on his belly, struggling to get both hands under him so he could push himself up. The light was bad, but Conrad saw that the bandana mask had slipped down, revealing a coarse, pain-twisted face.
You... Bitch!
I've been called worse than a son of a bitch before, amigo.
The man didn't hear him. His head slumped back to the ground. Conrad moved over to him and carefully checked for a pulse without finding one. Both outlaws were dead. They wouldn't be answering any questions about whether it had been a real hold-up attempt or something else, something even more deadly. Conrad heard police whistles blowing. He didn't want to spend hours talking to the authorities. The poker tournament was supposed to start in less than 2 hours. He turned and looked for the buggy. It had come to a stop about 50 yards up the street, when the momentary panic of the horses had run out of steam. He grabbed his fallen hat out of the street and hurried toward the vehicle, anxious to make sure Rose was all right. Maybe now she would understand it wasn't such a good idea to spend much time around him. When he reached the buggy, he saw her slumped to the side on the seat.
Rose! Rose!
He holstered the .32 at the small of his back and sprang onto the seat next to her. Taking hold of her shoulders, he turned her toward him. Her eyelids fluttered. At least she was alive, he thought.
Rose, can you hear me? Are you all right?
Conrad?
Yes. Are you hurt?
With his help, she straightened up. She blinked rapidly, looking confused for a second.
No, I'm all right. I think I hit my head against the back of the seat when the horses took off. What about you?
I'm fine. I'd like to get out of here, though. I don't want to be stuck here talking to the law.
Those men?
Both dead.
Oh, my.
Conrad reached for the reins.
Conrad, I hope you won't take this the wrong way, but I think it might be a good idea if we didn't see each other anymore.
Don't worry. I understand.
Mrs. Sherman made a big fuss over Rose when she found out what had happened.
Someone tried to rob the two of you again?
She put an arm around Rose and gave Conrad an angry frown.
Please, don't blame Mr. Browning. He saved us both times.
Well, perhaps it wouldn't have happened if you weren't with him. Let's get you upstairs to your room. I'll make you a nice cup of sassafras tea, dearie. That'll settle your nerves right down.
Good night, Conrad.
He drove the buggy back to the livery stable in the next block down from the Lansing house, where he turned it over to the hostler. He wouldn't need the buggy again, as the palace was also within walking distance of the hotel. Since he'd been rolling around in the street while engaged in the shootout, he wanted to change his suit before heading for the gambling parlor. Arturo was a little surprised to see him.
Good Lord, did you run into trouble again, sir?
You sound like Mrs. Sherman.
Conrad took off his coat and started untying his cravat.
Who?
Never mind. But to answer your question, yes, a couple men on horseback jumped us while we were driving around after dinner.
And what did you do?
In answer, Conrad reached behind him and took off the holstered .32. He placed it on a table.
Ah, of course. You shot them. Are you injured?
No, I'm fine. Just wondering why it is that hombres keep trying to rob me.
Beyond the obvious reason of stealing your money?
Exactly.
And are you asking yourself why these hold-up men seem to be drawn to you while you are in the company of Miss Sullivan?
Conrad gave Arturo a hard stare.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, it is rather coincidental that the last two times you and Miss Sullivan were alone together, someone attacked you and tried to kill you.
I don't think I like what you're getting at, Arturo.
I don't like it either, sir. But it's something to consider.
As a matter of fact, Conrad had considered it, and the possibility had cropped up even stronger in his mind as he was driving back to the hotel from Mrs. Sherman's house. The idea had been reinforced by the fact that when he picked up Rose's handbag that afternoon, it had seemed a little heavier than it should have, as if a gun had been in it. When he first thought that, he had told himself without hesitation that he was crazy. Rose was just a sweet, pretty young woman who worked in Ellery Hudson's office. That was all. He had no proof that there was anything more to her than that. Anyway, it was too far-fetched to think that she could have had anything to do with the attacks on him. She had been in danger both times herself. Or had she? If the man in the garden had succeeded in burying that knife in his back, what would he have done then? Would he have killed Rose too? Or would she have congratulated him on a job well done? Conrad felt the blood in his veins start to turn to ice as he remembered how she had been distracting him just before the attack took place. But she had killed the attacker herself, he reminded himself. She had plunged that knife right into his back. Because she was afraid Conrad would defeat him and question him, and the man might reveal her part in the scheme? The only real danger Rose had been in after dinner was when the buggy's horses bolted, and that had been Conrad's doing. If he hadn't made that play, the two so-called robbers might have gunned him down as soon as he stepped out of the buggy and left Rose to tell the police whatever story she wanted. She had grabbed his arm when he first reached for his gun, too, he recalled, an act apparently of fear, but maybe not. The dying gunman might not have been calling him a son of a bitch after all, Conrad speculated. Maybe he had been referring to Rose as a bitch, because the job had gone all wrong. Rose had admitted that she hadn't been in Denver for long. All he had for her background was her word. Sure, it was loco to think she might be playing some convoluted part in Pamela Tarleton's vengeance scheme. But Pamela had made other elaborate arrangements before her death that didn't bear their perilous fruit until after she was gone.
Sir?
Conrad came out of his reverie and realized Arturo was talking to him. He had been standing there motionless, his cravat in his hand, thinking about Rose and turning over all the possibilities in his mind.
Sir, were the police involved in tonight's incident?
No. Since Rose and I weren't hurt, I got out of there before they could show up. I knew I had that poker game to get to, and I didn't want to stand around answering a lot of questions.
Indeed. You have Mr. Masterson's tournament and Mr. McKinney to deal with. But questions do need to be asked. Why don't you let me ask them?
You mean you're going to play detective, Arturo? Like that fellow in the stories by Conan Doyle?
Sherlock Holmes, sir. Yes. I thought that while you were busy with other matters, I could make a few discreet inquiries into Miss Sullivan's background and her activities here in Denver.
Very discreet, Arturo. Very discreet. If she's innocent, if she has nothing to do with any of this except being unlucky enough to be with me when those attempts were made, then I don't want her to know I was suspicious of her.
Of course, sir. I will be the very soul of discretion. Anyway, I can't get started on my investigation until tomorrow, and perhaps you'll find out what you need to know from Mr. McKinney tonight.
Maybe. I'll be surprised if it turns out to be that easy, though. I have a hunch McKinney will prove to be a tough nut to crack.
Conrad sensed the excitement in the palace when he walked in a short time later. Players in the tournament, along with a few employees of the gambling parlor, were the only ones who would be allowed into the private room once the games got underway, but everyone knew what was going to take place. A lot of people were talking excitedly about it. The tournament was the biggest thing to hit gambling circles in a long time. Because of that, a large crowd had shown up to wait in the main room and catch bits of news about what was going on in the chamber where the games were taking place. Bat Masterson was holding court, surrounded by a number of newspaper reporters, scribbling notes on their pads with stubby pencils. Conrad heard him talking about sporting blood and the gallantry of competition, as if instead of a poker tournament, it was the old-fashioned kind held between knights with lances and swords and shields. The sort of tournament where blood might be spilled. With so much money at stake, it might come to that, Conrad thought. Masterson caught Conrad's eye and winked. When he was through talking to the reporters, he came over and pumped Conrad's hand.
Ah, the Fourth Estate. What would we do without them? The thoughts crossed my mind that I might try my hand at journalism myself one of these days.
I'm sure you'd be good at it, Bat. Is everything ready for tonight?
Absolutely. In fact, you're the last of the players to arrive. That's why I was so glad to see you. I was afraid you might have changed your mind or that something had happened to you.
Did you get my buy-in? Ellery Hudson was supposed to have the bank send it over with some armed guards this afternoon.
Yes, it's locked up securely in the safe, along with the rest of the money, and there are half a dozen men with shotguns guarding it. Tough men, and I trust them completely. I know that sort of loot might be a very tempting target.
Masterson opened his coat a little to reveal he had revolvers and shoulder rigs under both arms.
I'll be on hand to protect it myself, if need be.
Conrad didn't think most would-be robbers would want to go up against the famous Bat Masterson, even for that sort of money.
What about the players? Is it all right for us to be armed as well?
I'm sorry, Conrad, but if you're packing iron, you'll have to surrender it before the games start. It wouldn't do to have somebody take offense over the way a hand turned out and start shooting.
As long as it's that way for everybody, I can go along with it. Just make sure nobody tries to sneak anything in.
Don't worry. The only weapons in there will be cards.
A short time later, Masterson rounded up all the players and herded them toward the double doors leading into the private room. Conrad spotted Rance McKinney among them. The rancher had abandoned his town suit and wore range clothes, black trousers, black shirt, and a black and white cowhide vest. He had never looked comfortable in fancier duds, and Conrad had a hunch McKinney thought he might play better if he was wearing his normal clothes. These things didn't matter to Conrad. He was in black trousers and jacket, white shirt, and string tie. He'd been wearing his black Stetson with the concho headband when he came in, but he had handed it to one of the palace's beautiful hostesses to take care of. Masterson collected guns and knives from the players before they were allowed to enter the room. He had quite a few pocket pistols, derringers, and even a few long-barreled hog legs before he was through, along with a number of knives of different sizes and styles. Conrad took off his holster and handed it over, and the .32. If he wasn't going to be carrying the gun, he didn't see any point in putting up with the discomfort of the holster.
All right, gentlemen, gather around.
The rest of the players entered the room, and someone closed the doors, shutting out the noise from the main room. One of the hostesses joined him, holding a huge white 10-gallon hat.
Inside this hat are numbered chips. You'll draw one at a time for seating assignments. Thad Harper, you go first.
The man Masterson had picked stepped forward and drew a chip from the hat. It had the numeral 3 on it. Masterson pointed out which table was the third one. The other men went up one by one and drew chips as well, spreading out across the room to the tables they had drawn. Once they had chosen their seats, hostesses appeared and asked if they wanted anything to drink. Most of the men declined, preferring to keep their heads clear, at least for a while. Conrad drew table 5, feeling a twinge of disappointment as he did so. McKinney had already drawn table 2. Conrad had been hoping to be at the same table as the rancher right from the start, but he knew he couldn't ask anyone to switch with him without arousing suspicion. That meant, in order to play against McKinney, he had to emerge as the big winner at table 5. There was nothing he could do about it, so he might as well get at it, he thought. After he had taken his seat, a lovely smiling hostess leaned over him.
Would you like a drink, sir? Wine? Brandy?
No, thanks.
A cigar?
Never picked up the habit.
Well, if you need anything, please let me know.
I will.
Conrad glanced over at table 2, where Rance McKinney was arranging stacks of chips in front of him. More than ever, his instincts told him McKinney knew more than he had admitted about Pamela's plans. Conrad would be betting more than money in that tournament. The real stake was the possibility that McKinney could tell him where his children were. While he was waiting for all the players to get settled in their seats and ready for the games to begin, Conrad looked around the room. It was quite large, maybe half the size of the main room. The 8 tables were arranged in a grid that took up most of the space in the center of the room. Around the walls were overstuffed divans, comfortable armchairs, and smaller side tables, places where men could relax while taking a break from the competition. Gas chandeliers over the tables provided plenty of illumination, while the lighting around the edges of the room was more subdued. Paintings, mostly sedate landscapes, hung on the walls. It was a comfortable room that felt like wealth, just the sort of place where rich men would gather to play high-stakes poker. When everyone was in place, Bat Masterson stood up and addressed the group to explain the rules of the tournament. Each man had an assortment of chips in front of him, representing his $10,000 buy-in. In addition, each man would be allowed to purchase up to another $10,000 in chips as the games proceeded. Breaks could be called whenever all the players at a table were in agreement. Players who were cleaned out and had to leave the game would be required to leave the room as well, although there was nothing stopping them from waiting in the main room outside until they found out who the big winners were. The big winners from each table would be allowed to remain in the room while the other winners were being determined. There would be an 8-hour break between the end of that round and the beginning of the next.
Is everyone clear on the rules? Any questions? All right, gentlemen. Good luck to you all. Start the games whenever you're ready.
Conrad didn't know the other 5 men at the table with him, although a couple of them looked vaguely familiar to him. He supposed he had seen them during previous visits to Denver. They took turns introducing themselves. Conrad took note of the names: Hal Roberts, Bernard Church, J.D. Wilson, Fred Montgomery, and Edgar Pennyworth. But he knew he probably wouldn't remember them in a week. They were just obstacles between him and Rance McKinney. On the other hand, he had to beat them all in order to move closer to McKinney, so he took a little time to study them. Roberts and Wilson had the staid look of successful businessmen. Bernard Church was a little harder to read, which told Conrad that he was probably a professional gambler. Fred Montgomery was a raw-boned railroad magnate. Conrad recognized the name. Edgar Pennyworth was an older man, probably 60, with a mild round face and a shock of white hair, who looked like he could have been a small-town preacher. He was probably the most dangerous opponent of them all, Conrad mused, simply because he didn't look like much of a threat. When Conrad gave them his name, Montgomery spoke up.
I thought I recognized you, Brannan. Didn't you own some stock in my railroad at one time?
I did. Maybe I still do. I don't really know. My lawyers handle everything like that.
He saw the scorn in Montgomery's eyes. He didn't think much of a man who didn't manage his own business affairs. If that led him or the others to underestimate Conrad, then so much the better. They cut cards to see who would have the deal first. It fell to Hal Roberts, who took the deck, shuffled, and dealt with reasonable deftness after announcing that they were playing simple 5-card stud. That was fine with Conrad. He watched the cards fall in front of him, not touching them until Roberts had finished dealing. Then he picked them up and expressionlessly looked to see what sort of hand he'd been dealt. The game was underway.